Notre Dame, with a historic tradition of excellence, welcomes you to the Jack Swarbrick Show, where we pursue all things Notre Dame athletics.
The Jack Swarbrick Show is brought to you by
Team Notre Dame Partner Spirit, Coke Zero, Under Armour, Gatorade, and is also sponsored by Xfinity. Now, the host of the Jack Swarbrick Show, Jack Nolan, on your home for Notre Dame football, 89 WLS.
Welcome, Irish fans, to this week's edition of the Jack Swarbrick Show. The number one is again lit atop Grace Hall because the Irish men's lacrosse team began the season as the nation's top team in the preseason polls and lived up to that ranking with a season-opening win over 13th-ranked Georgetown in Atlanta this past weekend. The head coach of the men's lacrosse team, Kevin Corrigan, will be our first guest on this week's show. The Notre Dame women's fencing team is heading into the stretch run of another fine season. The Irish are undefeated and ranked second in the country, heading into their defense of their ACC crown this weekend. Senior Nikki McKee will join us with a look at how the team has fared so far this season and give us a preview of this weekend's ACC championships, which will be held right here at Notre Dame. But first, to start our show with their weekly look at all things Irish, here are your hosts, Joe Schmidt and Jack Swarbrick.
Thank you, Joe. Great to be with you again. But I gotta figure out what's going on here. You're disappearing on me. There's people can't see probably because you're sitting down, but there's significantly less of you than there was as recently as 60 days ago. So, is this intentional? What's going on?
I think I needed to stop eating for a little while. The amount that I was consuming in calories and just meals per day was starting to weigh on me and also on my pocketbook. So I think I needed to just take some time. I've only lost, like, I think 10 pounds, and I'm 17 down from my heaviest I've ever been. But I feel better, and I'm making the improvements. But while we're on this topic, I think we need to point out that someone – is making some questionable decisions in their diet. Jack, you're drinking Pib Extra.
Yeah, well, it's an approved product, but I ran out of iced tea today, and
you ran out of iced tea.
Well, I mean, I consumed my second large iced tea before this show started. I didn't want to make a member of the staff make another run for us, so. That was my fluid of choice.
Jack,
I left the bourbon upstairs, so here, I just
my offer to you. Any time that you need iced tea to prevent you from drinking that and putting that in your body, I will go and get you the iced tea. Yeah. I'll even pay for the
iced tea. My wife will pay you to keep me from drinking
Sounds
that.
Sounds like a good job.
So I appreciate it. But so, you know, we jest about this, but you guys do a lot to maintain weight. You eat a lot of calories. I mean, Connor Hanratty starts playing and he's down like 60 pounds, it seems, overnight. Steve Elmer has already lost a bunch of weight. It comes off pretty quickly because you guys work so hard to maintain weight, right?
Yeah. And it's amazing because the stuff that we're doing now as a football program, I think that really collegiate athletics is starting to catch on to the importance that diet has on your performance and how big you need to stay and the composition of that mass. So right now, I mean, even our football team, you know, they're tracking all of their meals. And I think it's great that you have to do that. But I mean, it's amazing. And I guess maybe I'll give you an idea of what I would do every day to eat. I would wake up each and every morning early. I would have a huge breakfast, and I would follow that up 2 hours later with a large protein shake that I would make. 2 hours after that, I'd eat lunch. 2 hours after that, I'd have another large protein shake. Practice, then I'd have a large dinner, protein shake. Then I would go either a dinner or a protein shake again before bed, and then I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would have yet another protein shake. So as you can see, that's probably the reason for why I've lost so much weight.
What was the calorie intake like? Do you know?
North of 5,000 calories per day.
Wow.
I was on I basically was a little over a 4,000 calorie just straight food diet, and then I would put in like a few 500 calorie shakes per day. So I was like, you know, in the 5,500 to 6,000 calorie range, just because of metabolism and what I needed to do.
Yeah, I remember reading about what Michael Phelps consumed once, and it was like twice that
daily,
you know, just to because of the amount he worked out. I do not have that problem.
Swimmers are a rare breed. Those guys can eat whatever they want, pancakes and waffles and pizza for the same meal. So
they're amazing.
Yeah.
It's a big week in my hometown and a big week for a large number of your former teammates. The Combine is in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
It is a great event for that city, great economic impact. It's the circus comes to town. The Dallas Cowboys bus was parked outside at St. Elmo's last night, I was told. But it's an important week for some of your former teammates. Tell me a little bit about your perceptions of what they're going through right now.
You know, it's a stressful, kind of a tense time. And it's amazing because people might not realize, but the day after the bowl game, guys are at the training sites where they're training. So, you know, if they're training in Southern California, if they're training in Dallas or Scottsdale or wherever, they all go immediately thereafter and there's no rest. So they've kind of just been grinding since August to try to get to this moment. So, I saw Ronnie Stanley this past weekend and talked with him briefly. I've been talking to Jalen and Sheldon and all the other guys through this process, but they've just been training so hard. So I feel good for them in that all of their work is about to pay off and that I know they're all going to do so well and they're so well prepared. But yet at the same time, I feel like I want them to just be done with it. But it's a great event. I've never been down there. Have you been down there?
Well, yeah, because I spent so many years living and working down there, I was around it a lot, and we got to find this out. But I'd like to know the volume of business at the St. Elmo's Steakhouse in this week every year. I mean, it's just all NFL teams.
Really?
Yeah, every head coach, every owner is in that restaurant at some point during the week. Sometimes more often than once.
So. Do they do like activities as they do around like the Super Bowl for this combine, you know?
No, the NFL, it's changed a little bit. The NFL did not want it to have much of a public face for many years.
Right.
They wanted to just do their business. They've now made it a little more public, but not to the degree of other NFL things. It's more focused on what the NFL network can do with it than having, you know, any sort of NFL village that people can come do activities in or have any of that stuff.
Right. I thought it was always so fascinating because it's like I was talking to Coach Van Gorder about this, and he said, you're not even allowed in the building a lot of the time, and you almost see it better from outside the building. There's certain writers that feel like they can write a more compelling story by watching the TV footage now.
Yeah, the scene at this deal is the hotel lobbies.
Right.
that's where all the action is happening. A little bit on the combine itself, but the hotel lobbies are crazy. And then after this event, of course, we have an important pro day here.
Right.
Where not only the guys who made the combine, but other guys, perhaps Everett Golson, I read, maybe just being in the pro day, will be back. And that's a day where we just showcase people here, right?
Yeah, so it's actually a really fun day for our players as well, because assuming you don't have class in the morning after workouts, you can kind of walk out there. You get to see all of the surrounding exciting atmosphere that kind of comes along with the day, and just watch all your friends. And it's great to kind of have everybody come back. So I'm looking forward to everybody coming back into town and to spend some time with them, before leading into that pro day. But those events are essentially all of the same combine events, but just for Notre Dame student athletes. And scouts will come and watch for those that are maybe uninitiated to the pro day process.
I'm feeling another remote broadcast coming on.
I think we need this for this show.
If we're still, I can't remember the time. If we're still doing it, then let's get to the other sports before we run out of time in this segment. It was a busy weekend. Let's start with women's basketball. Big game down Florida State. They have the number one RPI in the country, and reflective of that, yet another highly ranked opponent. They went down, refound their 3-point shooting form, were really effective from out on the floor, and came away with another victory.
I mean, it's great to see our women just continue to win and continue to work. They're just going through methodically through their schedule. They go in each and every game with the same determination. And really they've closed out their season quite nicely. And I'm so happy for them in that, the winning this game was big in order to hopefully get those two first buys, the double buy going into the tournament. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how they close it up here with Clemson. I think is their next game, and just kind of seeing how they wrap down the season.
Yeah, the tournament, the conference tournament, and for them it includes a double bye, and then the national tournament, of course, is just around the corner. Had shades of a celebration injury that we had during football. Catherine Westfield went running to help Lindsay off the floor and twisted her ankle. I thought, oh no, I've seen this before.
I was going to say, don't bring those up, man. Yeah. It's that's just for me and the celebration injuries. You know, you see the highlight of that, and you immediately think, immediately think to do the awful happenings that I've been unfortunately a part of. But I'm just so happy that she'll be okay.
And
we're gonna
fine.
Move forward. But yeah, tough weekend for the boys, though.
It was, you know, and you knew this one and Wake Forest. What you've got are two teams that have struggled during the year, played everybody really tight, and they're sort of finding themselves in the back end of the schedule, and that's when we're hitting them. Unfortunately, and Georgia Tech played a good game. You know, I thought when we got up six with about 3 minutes left to go, we were going to be in good shape. But Georgia Tech made some shots, especially a really tough three-pointer down the stretch, and we weren't able to respond. So still in great shape for the tournament, but that was a tough loss.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just a hard way to lose a basketball game. And I know, you know, after the game, you know, coach said that, you know, maybe the guys were a little gassed, or maybe, you know, if you could do it this way, if you could do it that way. I think they played really, really hard, and they're playing great basketball right now. I don't think there's anybody in the country that wants to play our basketball team. And I think that, you know, they should have tremendous confidence going into these last few games and into their tournament.
Yeah, and it's such a crazy year. I mean, I've never seen it more wide open, literally going into it. Now, it may turn out that, you know, some of the traditional powers will make runs during the tournament. But right now, when you look at it and you see, you know, somebody's going to win the ACC with four or five losses as the regular season champion, and that's that just speaks to what's going on out there.
I was
going
to say, I mean, it's amazing to see North Carolina losing to Duke when, you know, Duke's unranked and Carolina's supposedly one of the best teams, and then you got Oklahoma losing some tough games. It's almost as if everybody can be beaten right now, and it's crazy to me.
Yeah, among the notable events over the weekend was a really very successful weekend for women's softball overall, but a nice win against a team from your part of the world, the eighth-ranked UCLA Bruins.
I was going to say, my mom's not thrilled about it, being a Bruin herself, but it's a great victory for us. The way we're starting the year there, we're really doing really well. I'm excited.
And we'll be able to focus on men's lacrosse here when we talk to Coach Corrigan, but women have continued their strong start, playing a highly ranked BC team and really taking it to them.
Yeah, and we talked about this, I know, before the show, but wow, their athleticism is really kind of showing itself right now early in the year, and it's great to see. You know, we're beating a team that's a quality opponent in Boston College by 10 goals. We beat Stanford, who's great. So it's really encouraging to see the 3-0 start and just to see where they can take this. I mean, obviously they got a great team this year.
It's going to be an exciting spring at Notre Dame Athletics. Joe, let's take a break, and we'll come back with our guest.
Sounds good.
Irish fans, make sure you download the official WatchND mobile app, available on iOS and Android devices. The WatchND mobile app is the best way to experience great Fighting Irish digital media, video, and audio content right on your tablet or smartphone. You'll get full access to our entire video on-demand library, live game and event broadcasts, live shows and press conferences, live game stats, and more. And best of all, it's free. Search for WatchND in the iTunes Store or Android Play to download the WatchND mobile app today.
I'll watch the Oscars Sunday night. Monday morning, I'll be back with predictable talk show righteous indignation over Chris Rock's jokes. John Howell, WDLS, AM 890.
Our first guest this week is beginning his 28th season as the head coach of the Notre Dame men's lacrosse team. During the previous 27 seasons, Kevin Corrigan has guided the Irish to 20 NCAA tournament appearances, including 10 in a row. Notre Dame is the only team in the country to advance to at least the quarterfinals of the NCAA tournament in each of the last six seasons and advance to the title game in 2010 and 2014.
Last season, the Irish earned the number one seed in the NCAA tournament for the first time and began this season for the first time ranked number one in the preseason polls. This past weekend, the Irish began their season with an impressive 12-7 win over 13th-ranked Georgetown in Atlanta. Clearly, there is a lot for Jack and Joe to talk about with Coach Corrigan today.
Coach, welcome. Thrilled to have you on the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
How did you get hired at age 10 in order to coach for 28 years?
Sure.
It's a very impressive feat.
First game is in the books, a successful start to the season. What'd you learn? Well, you know, the first game is always so informative. You find out something about your team. What was it?
Yeah. You know, I was pleasantly surprised, and that's probably not something I usually say after a first game, but we were a little more prepared for things than I thought we were. We had an erratic preseason, if you will, a lot to figure out for ourselves, and so I was most happy, I guess, with just the kind of good continuity that we played with between the different areas of the game and a lot of new faces on the field for us, and I thought they all did a nice job.
You jumped on them pretty quickly in the game, and it's been true in recent years, but there's an awful lot of firepower on this team offensively.
Yeah, there is, and we have that ability to get on people starting quickly. Such a great advantage. To play from the lead it just has a different feel on the sideline, you know. And yet we didn't relax at any point during the game, which was really nice. It showed a maturity that I wasn't sure we have or had at this point. But we do have some firepower, you know. And when you have guys like Sergio and Cav and some of them, you know, we didn't go into the game worried about our knowns. We worried about our unknowns.
Sure.
We lost five guys who had essentially started for 4 years. And you know, those are deep holes. They're not just holes. They're deep holes. And you know, it's been so long since you've had other people in those roles that you kind of haven't groomed the next guy in some ways quite the same way that you do when there's that more consistent turnover. So I was concerned about some of that, and that affects those great players, you know, because those other guys have to make plays that in service of those guys being able to hunt their plays, you know.
You know, you said you were pleasantly surprised by the way you started. I don't know if we were also surprised, because you had such tremendous success early in the year. In the past few years, you've been something to the effect of 25-5 or something along those lines. How do you continue to reload year after year and win these early games? And I know they're challenging games still. You play the number 13 in the nation.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I love playing somebody good right off the bat, because to me it changes the whole urgency of preseason. When you know that first game is one you have to be prepared for, then the first practice is one you have to be prepared for, and there's no sense of easing into it in a way. So that's always been something we've tried to schedule somebody, you know, really good right up front. I don't know. I mean, I think we have a great advantage in Loftus. We're in a perfect conditions every single day, in shorts and t-shirts practicing, you know, for our 2 hours, and we don't adjust our schedule to accommodate weather or anything else. We've got kind of the perfect environment for practice in my book, and to me there's nothing better than, you know, a good practice in terms of finding out who you are and preparing your team.
Spoken like a true coach, right?
Absolutely. I'm glad to hear the facility's good. Coach, in many ways you've led the geographic redefinition of this sport. I mean, you, for my first couple of years here, when we'd be in the NCAA tournament, they'd be asking us about whether a Western team could win, you know, viewing us as a Western team. Now you've got players from around the country. You're playing around the country. If I'm not mistaken, you're going to Los Angeles. Is that right?
Yes.
For some games.
It'll be in Orange County.
Yeah. How has that impacted coaching at Notre Dame for you? I mean, I assume there's a bigger recruiting footprint to look at. You're scheduling a little differently because you're traveling around the country more. What are the impacts of this game becoming national?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm more like, you know, holding on to the Tiger's tail there than leading any Western expansion. But I mean, honestly, the game has grown. It's so different than it was 28 years ago when I got here. Our program is so different, and in all honesty, I mean, I've been very fortunate to be here at a time when the game was growing, when our program was growing, when the resources that the university was providing were growing, and it allowed us to continue to compete at a higher and higher level. That also just happened to coincide with the game growing and expanding and going to these new regions, where all of a sudden we were looked at you know, initially is kind of being on the edge of the universe, like, you know, like you're two steps past South Bend, you stepped off, you know, and now it's we're kind of in the middle, and which is a great place to be. And so it's made it kind of a fun thing, but we always tried to use it as a strength. We always said, look, if we're on the edge, that means we can see in both directions, you know, and we can watch the game grow and help it grow in those areas, and we still can see everything, you know, back east of us and what's going on there. So I think we're really have been in a kind of a fortunate position and fortunate timing to see it all kind of come together, But yeah, now what's going on in the game? Like you said, we've got more kids on our team from California than we do from Baltimore, Maryland. And if you'd have said that was going to be true 30 years ago, they'd have said, "Well, you're not very good."
So. This is probably a bad question to ask you of all coaches, but it strikes me that when any sport grows that fast, one of the fundamental challenges is officiating.
It absolutely is. And, you know, I mean, it's honestly the game our game is being hurt at all levels by a lack of officiating and coaches.
Yeah.
There's an inversion there's so many people playing and two generations ago, the people who'd be doing a lot of coaching and officiating now, there just weren't that many people in the game. And so naturally there's not enough of either of those two resources, you know, and that's probably the biggest thing right now. That's a challenging to our sport continuing to grow is, you know, who coaches all these new youth teams? There are a lot of fathers out there picking up a guide and looking up and we do all these videos that we put online, you know, because we're trying to help coaches like that who are all over the country saying, look, I just need a drill. I'm out there. I look like an idiot. My kid knows more than I do. I want to be able to have a drill to give him. So
how is that immense growth and that rapid expansion, these coaches that don't know what they're doing, how is that affecting your recruiting process, trying to find the best players? If there's no continuity in the coaching realm, so you can't talk to a trusted coach, how are you kind of finding these players in California rather than the hotbeds of Baltimore to find a play for your team?
Yeah, well, you know, it's always been interesting to me that whether a kid comes from Utah, some kids have a sense of our game and some don't. And sometimes they got it from playing hockey or playing basketball, and they just have great spatial awareness, and they see the game develop, and they can put the pieces in place in their mind. And other times a guy is just a kind of a linear guy, you know, and he just sees what's right in front of him, and that's it. And so it's always been interesting to me that good coaching obviously helps at all levels, you know, to develop a player and all of that. But there's a – you can kind of watch a guy and see what his sense and feel for this game is. And if that guy has that good sense and feel for it, then you can get that guy to be a pretty good IQ guy in our sport. You know.
So is that something you're looking for in that recruiting process?
It's probably the biggest thing we look for. It's funny, I'm talking to my brother who's here this weekend. We've been talking about what we value in a player versus what some other people value. And the four things you evaluate guys are, you know, their physical ability, their stick skills, and you know, shot and that kind of thing, their IQ for the game, and then the intangibles, you know, how competitive are they, how right. poised are they, how, you know, all those different things. We value IQ almost above all else, you know. I mean, you have to have a certain amount of athleticism to play at this level. You have to have a certain amount of skill. But if you have great IQ, we can find a place for you because you make people better. Those guys are multipliers, you know. The guys in our game who really have a great IQ, they make everybody on the field better. And most times – people don't even realize how they're doing it or why they're doing it. They just they're in the right place when somebody needs them as a release. They're all of a sudden a guy who has the ball has space and he doesn't know how he got that space to dodge into, but it's because that other guy realized that if he moves over here, that space is there for that guy. Right. You know, just these little things that guys that have an IQ for our game, and it's a part that I think is probably the most underappreciated talent in the game. As we say to guys all the time, like, listen, after the game, your mother's not going to say to you, I saw you clear space. It was fantastic. I can't believe you did it. You know, like, and a mother would say it if she saw it.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Given the unathletic people, the recognition.
Your mother.
My mom. I was like, hey, that was a great call out there, man.
way to get the team aligned correctly.
Exactly.
Hey, somebody needs to do it, okay?
That's right. You know, you have always given your team the most challenging schedules you can. Now, in a sense, that happens by virtue of being in the ACC. What a conference slog that is. Give us a little scouting report on the conference this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, it hasn't been a great start for the conference. Virginia and North Carolina both lost early season games, which you kind of not used to seeing them lose. I think all the teams are very, very talented. They're going to be very good. I think Syracuse and Duke are both championship contenders. But honestly, Virginia and Carolina could be as well. But I think early in the season, it looks like Syracuse and Duke are both playing very well. So that's always a great thing. But then we've got Denver and all the other teams that we like to line up. I mean, I think everybody but two are in the top 20 right now in our schedule, and seven or eight of them are in the top 10. So it's not for the faint of heart, but we got a team that can handle it. I mean, we need to get a little bit lucky with injuries, and that kind of thing. But as long as we stay healthy, I don't mind going against the top teams, because they just build something in your team to know that they have to compete at that level all the time. It changes practice, Right. People know the guys who are not playing, who are playing roles, they're doing the actions and playing the roles of the best players in the country on the best teams in the country, and going against some of our guys who are the best players in the country. So I think, what you find is everybody's level of play gets raised every day. And I don't think you can manufacture that quite the same way if you don't have a challenging schedule.
Well, Coach, congratulations on the quick start. Good luck for the rest of the season. We'll be watching carefully and rooting for the number one Irish. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
The Fighting Irish play here. WLS.
EM 890.
The Notre Dame fencing program is always one of the top programs in the country, and this season is no different. This weekend at the Castellon Family Fencing Center here in the Joyce Center, both the men's and women's teams begin defense of the ACC crowns both teams won last season. It was an historic event for the Irish women, as last year's event marked the first time the ACC had ever held a championship event for women's fencing. Now senior Nikki McKee played a key role in helping the Irish win the title last year, and she joins us today to talk about how the nationally number two ranked Irish have fared so far this season and to preview this weekend's ACC championship.
Nikki, thanks for joining us. Thrilled to have you here.
Happy to be here.
It's always an interesting question for me when we have fencers on the show. We love having them on. How'd you get started?
The Parent Trap.
Is that right?
The movie?
The movie with Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, my gosh.
My sister and I were watching it one day, and she was a little bit more intrigued than I was. I was doing competitive gymnastics at the time, and she started taking lessons, doing fencing practice, and she'd come home and just beat me up with the end of a broomstick. And I was like, oh, this seems fun. I want to beat people up. And then I started doing it, quit gymnastics on the spot, and have been doing it ever since I was eight.
How did you come to pick your weapon?
I think it was chosen for me, honestly. I remember going to the club, and we had one of the best coaches in the nation at the fencing club in New York, and I just decided to start with him.
Well, the obvious question, and I'll turn it over to our co-host for a question, is how would he do against you? Would he score a point? Would he get a touch?
He's pretty athletic.
Me?
Maybe a point.
I've got length. I've got good feet. What do you mean? I feel like it's everything I need, right?
That's the first time I've ever heard you described as having length.
I mean, it's all relative. We're talking like, Troy Nicklaus to Joe Schmidt, obviously there's a disparity there. But
I don't think length really matters. I'm 5'4", and I've been doing pretty fine with being short. So
what are the things that matter to becoming a great fencer?
Physically?
Let's go physically and then talk maybe intangibles as well.
Definitely strong legs, manual dexterity.
Check.
Yeah, so definitely the movement is pretty important, and the accuracy of the tip.
And so obviously you have both of those natural abilities, but how did you kind of transition from like those raw skills into becoming one of the best fencers in the nation like you are today?
Experience and practice. A lot of people that start later in the game and they start kind of after their formative years, they're not as malleable. I think definitely starting earlier is a huge advantage. Get to fine tune those skills.
After feeding my iced tea addiction this morning, I was driving to campus and the big electronic billboard mm-hmm. was promoting the ACC championship. I mean, this was big-time fencing promotion right on the board yeah. there. Great, a great image. So we're excited to host that.
Definitely.
What's the competition like in ACC fencing?
So it consists of four teams, us, Duke, North Carolina, and Boston College. And last week or 2 weekends ago, we went to Duke and we had some exposure to these other teams that are going to be here. So it's definitely nice just to get some exposure to them, kind of gauge the range and depth of their teams. But we're really excited to host. It's a very prestigious and huge honor for us.
Well, and we got a facility that accommodates it pretty well now, right?
Oh yeah, we're very spoiled. My freshman year, we were upstairs, smaller gym, and now we have a lounge to ourselves, great facility, a lot of fencing strips available to us, so a lot more practice is being done.
I guess this is what happens when you win the national title or compete for the national title every year.
Yeah.
But what is that? What does the competitive landscape in fencing look like? So for the ACC championship, I feel like we compete every year. We compete for the national title. How dominant really are the top couple teams? And talk about maybe the rest of the country.
It's pretty consistent. The top teams are usually the top every single year. Last year we had Columbia as reigning champions for this year, so we're kind of looking towards facing them at NCAA is looking down the road. So most of the fencing teams, I mean, it's Notre Dame, Columbia, Ohio State, Penn State, those are the real tough competitors that we're used to being competitive with.
You know, there's an interesting dynamic in your sport, a few others, but in some ways fencing even more so, and that is in the Olympic year like this year, the makeup of teams changes quite a bit.
Definitely.
So Lee Kiefer, for example,
right.
great fencer for our squad, is preparing for the Olympics. It must be harder to sort of predict what the national competition is going to look like in Olympic year based on who's coming back and who's not.
Yeah, we're missing a few fencers this year due to the Olympics and them taking the year off. And we've definitely lost some edge on competition-wise and practice-wise just because Lee is such a dominant force both on and off the strip. So in competition, we're used to her being able to guarantee certain wins. And in practice, it's always pretty hard bout. You know, you really have to think and execute perfectly when you're fencing her. So losing just even a practice partner is a bit of a deficit, but our freshmen have really made an impact and a huge impression this year.
Another interesting dynamic I think is unique to fencing. It's one of those sports that's both male and female, right? To win the match, if I'm
right.
correct. So what's that dynamic like? Maybe you know, in the locker room when you're traveling, it's got to be just really unique to your sport. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, the dynamic is, I love it personally. You really get to know both sides. And when you're fencing, like you said, you're competing at the same time, men and women. And even though they're separate events, they're combined at the end for the total. And there's just a huge support. So it's definitely different. We definitely have more support and we rely on each other more. There's a little bit more pressure, but I definitely like it.
You know, you talked about supporting each other, but don't, if I'm also not mistaken, and tell me if I'm wrong, you have to beat a teammate if you want to win the event. Isn't that correct?
Only in certain. So ACC's is a little bit different dynamic just because you get to fence in a team event and an individual event. So it's definitely a learning experience just for the fact that you kind of have to, if you lose to a teammate, you kind of have to accept defeat, but you also have to relish in their victory just because you want them to continue in the next round. So it's definitely tough to do, but it's doable.
When I first arrived here now 8 years ago and went to my first fencing competition, although I do remember attending them when I was a student here, I had a little trouble following it because everyone had the same uniform on.
Yeah.
I've been on a campaign ever since then to get a little Notre Dame identification.
Yeah.
Starting to emerge, isn't it, that you're starting to see, because typically national team uniforms or identification are the more important in the sport, where you can sort of tell who's who out there.
Yeah.
What sorts of things are happening in the uniforms, or I know some of it's with the socks. I know there's a whole national discussion about what college fencing uniforms should look like.
Yeah, this year we've actually been making huge adjustments. We have Notre Dame monogram patches on each arm. We started wearing gold masks, and they also have gold plates of ND monograms on the side of the masks. We have blue and gold stripes down the side of our legs, and then blue and gold socks as well. So we're definitely adding a lot to distinguish ourselves, because I know that that was a main issue in spectators.
Yeah, well, it's just when your AD doesn't know what he's looking at. See what can happen?
Major issue is not being able to identify your student-athletes. Is there any chance you could just drop your sword in the hydrographics that we put on our helmets? So then we have legitimately gold sabers and swords. Like, could you do that? Is that possible? Is it even ridiculous for me to ask? Can I start a campaign?
You can maybe make the guards a different color, but yeah, I think the problem is, like, with the metal, the conductivity of it, because it needs to be able to be conductive for the machine to register it. So we've kind of had some issues here and there with that, but they've been resolved for the most part.
The trick would be to get the other team to dip its
this could be interesting
its weapon
well.
In yeah. so that they couldn't record the touch.
Yeah. A submissive white, if we would. Just a very submissive color, I think, could be the best thing. But
yeah. We learned in the introduction that you're from New York, but give us some of the other background as to who you are. Major here, residence hall,
sure.
Anything else that gives us some insights into what Notre Dame life is like for you?
So I'm pre-health major and sociology major in the College of Arts and Letters, hoping to go on to dental school after I take a gap year after I graduate. I was in Welsh Family Hall for 3 years, and now I'm currently off campus in Clover Ridge. And I usually spend my downtime either painting my nails, watching videos of pugs online, or FaceTiming my pug at home, or watching, like, Friends or Law & Order.
Sounds like a wonderful life, yeah. Life away from fencing. Yeah. Talk a little bit about the leadership dynamics on your team. Obviously, you're one of the leaders. You're helping us, on this road to the ACC championship and hopefully a national title. But how do you kind of lead on a team with guys and girls and when you have to fight against each other? What's that leadership dynamic like?
I definitely think you need a lot of trust. Either like with the leader or the leader with the teammates. And I think that we have a great dynamic of that and a great aspect of that on our team. But also I think necessary to be a good leader is just getting to know your teammates. Because if you get to know them, you understand why they're reacting a certain way to things. And then you can also just have a different approach. And I was in Rosenthal Leadership Academy here. And that was probably one of the biggest things I learned is that not everybody responds to one type of approach. You really need to adjust with different types of people. And
how did you learn how to do that adjustment? I feel like there's so many fine-tuned, subtle differences in approaches. How did you kind of go about that?
Kind of just practicing with different people. If I saw the opportunity to get involved in a certain situation or address a certain issue, I would always be the first one. And I definitely think that helped me develop as a leader and as just a fencer in general, too, because I'm one of the older ones on the foil squad. And also, I think vulnerability is really important, because you can't be tough all the time, and you have to let your teammates know that, because then it's you kind of, like, teach them through your own actions that it's okay for them to be vulnerable.
Those are some great insights. Yeah. Makes me feel like the Rosenthal Leadership Academy is working.
Yeah.
If you came away with those lessons, and I appreciate the leadership you are providing to the team. Good luck down the home stretch here with
Thank
the
you.
Conference and national championship competition. We'll be rooting for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. We'll be back in a minute.
Irish fans, make sure you download the official WatchND mobile app available on iOS and Android devices. The WatchND mobile app is the best way to experience great Fighting Irish digital media, video, and audio content right on your tablet or smartphone. You'll get full access to our entire video on demand library, live game and event broadcasts, live shows and press conferences, live game stats, and more. And best of all, it's free. Search for WatchND in the iTunes Store or Android Play to download the WatchND mobile app today.
Notre Dame football is on WLS.
AM 890.
We have come to the end of another interesting and informative Jack Swarbrick Show, and here to wrap things up are your hosts, Jack and Joe.
Jack with the significantly reduced Joe Schmidt. You know, as I look at our schedule for the coming week for our teams, it reminds me of just how much goes into sort of building these schedules and making them work. We got softball, who's at the ESPN Wide World of Sports in Orlando in a tournament this coming week. Baseball is in Texas. Golf is in Alabama. You know, part of the challenge of the geography is for the spring sports, they got to go away and play. And so it creates challenges at the front end of the schedule, but even more than that, making that work in the classroom, making it, you know, still meeting our obligations at Notre Dame, where you never miss more than three classes during the regular season. You have time for your academics. An awful lot goes into making trips like that work.
Yeah, I think our coaching staffs do a great job of kind of providing the resources necessary on the road, giving them time. And then our student athletes do a great job of, you know, studying on trips, you know, getting together with group projects with people on our team and just being ready to, you know, kind of perform in the classroom but also on the athletic field. They do a great job.
And that's the byword for Notre Dame, performing both places. Joe, thanks again for another great show, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week, Jack. Thank you very much.
Go Irish.
Go Irish.
This has been the Jack Swarbrick Show, brought to you by Team Notre Dame partners Sprint, Coke Zero, Under Armour, Gatorade, and is also sponsored by Xfinity. Listen this time every week for everything Notre Dame athletics, the Jack Swarbrick Show, on your home for Notre Dame football, 89 WLS.